Welcome to the Tate Talks podcast.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by JumpCloud for MSPs. JumpCloud for MSPs provides managed service providers a platform for delivering modern IT services that are identity-centric, cloud-native, and vendor-agnostic.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us again. And today, in yet another career-defining project, I get to speak to my boss, Greg Keller of JumpCloud. Firstly, he shocked me when he mentioned his age, and then I totally misunderstood how JumpCloud picked up their initial clients. So if you want to hear me failing and desperately clinging onto my job, have a listen. Hi, Greg. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us today. I know we've been trying to arrange this for a while, but you're a super busy man. So really appreciate you taking the time.
Mr. Tate, good to see you. And I will be seeing you hopefully in less than a week as we travel across the globe, across the pond, and visit our now extensive team in EMEA. So hopefully we'll be able to see each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe we should have recorded the podcast then. That might have been slightly easier. Here we go. Yeah. That never crossed my mind. So obviously I know who you are because obviously I work with you pretty closely, but there may be some people listening today that aren't aware of you. So maybe could you tell us a little bit about yourself, what you get up to? Tell us about Greg.
Yeah, for sure. I'll keep it short and sweet. Obviously, this is the boring stuff. I'm Greg. I'm one of the co-founders of JumpCloud. Consider me the person who kind of executed on the ideation of this platform that we envisioned many, many years ago, roughly 9 years ago now, and worked with at the time a very small team to bring that product to life. Fast forward 9 years, we have a global company, lots of incredible markets, including the MSP market, leveraging us every day. That's sort of, you know, my intersection with JumpCloud was to put on my product nerd hat and, you know, figure out how to take a big, hairy, audacious idea and bring that to market.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I just as you were speaking, it sort of reminded me of something that years and years ago, this is aging me, so it's probably considerably before your time, but I used to work for a company that was a Novell reseller. And obviously they were kind of big on the idea of a directory at the time with the Novell directory services, which came along. And then I think Microsoft came out with kind of the domain and then the Active Directory. So these are kind of huge companies trying to tackle this problem on premise, as it all was at the time. Yeah. So I'm trying to understand the challenge of you thinking, hang on, there's probably a better way of doing this.
Oh, for sure. First of all, I'm in my mid-50s, so I remember all of this stuff. And let me put it this way. Yeah, there are some immutable facts about computer science. And of it all the languages, the code, the hardware and software, everything comes down to a basic principle of access, authentication, and authorization. Can I get in the thing? And once I am in the thing, what am I allowed to do? And as early as X500 and primitive, you know, server-based gating and controlling mechanisms, even before they were called directories, those are the basic principles. To your point, the Novells of the world, HPs, Oracle, everybody who had in most poignantly in the late 80s, early 90s, obviously it was a mad race to occupy business computing software, IBM, another huge iconic company, all vying for at the time, on-premise compute power of the industry. Parenthetically, funny enough, we're all now, you know, moving towards who's going to own the cloud compute. But that's a digression and another, probably a podcast for another time. Microsoft, being Microsoft, really had the savvy to understand what these big companies were doing from, you know, client server computing standpoint, which generally were thin clients, all interconnected to very large mainframe systems, which again, HP, Novell, IBM, they were all in the 80s and 90s vying for. Microsoft had a very shrewd strategy in the early 90s to mid 90s, which was, we're going to commoditize all this. We're going to commoditize and quote, democratize. I challenge that word. But the way computers are really servicing access into an organization, i.e., it moved from, you know, server-based to in thin client to more thicker client Windows operating systems. So there immediately, you know, when you look at that, what did the Windows operating system, you know, do? What was its challenge? Well, its challenge was to provide access as a gateway into other Microsoft services that would run the business. Windows Server, Exchange and Outlook. In much later years, you would find SharePoint and other similar services. So it was shifting the sort of, the mainframe-based way of thinking to the Windows-based way of thinking. So to make that operate, guess what? It goes back to those very basic primitives, which was, if Microsoft is going to shift things to their client-based operating system, it's going to need an access control vehicle, and they need to control that. So at the time, you know, they were ripping pages out of the textbooks of these companies. Again, X500, primitives of LDAP, et cetera. And they developed their own derivative from that through right around the time that Windows 2000 domain services were being born. Frankly, you saw semblances of this in NT as well, but it was really the Windows Server 2000 that brought with it domain control aspects. You know, it would run the whole business. You would have the DNS. You would have all of the brokering of, you know, access control, group membership. In later variants, you would have security policies, what we now know as GPOs. So they created this analog and, you know, definitely took a hard look at LDAP and were able to, in their world, take a, you know, what it was a fast moving piece of open source software in LDAP and wrap it around, you know, their own services. You know, even to this day, LDAP is what is seen under the covers when you're really interrogating what an Active Directory server is receiving its commands, or it's generally LDAP search queries. I digress, but all of that is fundamental to JumpCloud's story. So think of us as, we're observing what Microsoft did, you know, in the move to owning an on-premise enterprise, literally transforming from the world of mainframe computing and disrupting the IBMs, the HPs, and the Novells of the world. Well, now the world of the cloud and lifting and shifting resources out of an on-premise world into space, basically into the cloud, really was a big hammer blow in, you know, to Microsoft's way of domain thinking, how to establish a domain-based enterprise that was largely built for on-premise. And we looked at that premise of, wow, you know, of all the things moving and lifting and shifting, why hasn't the most fundamental thing, piece of software that is, you know, arguably the most critical in your security access, you know, infrastructure, the directory, why hasn't that moved? Why isn't Microsoft doing this? And you saw fits and starts, and even to this day, watching Azure AD attempt to migrate Active Directory capabilities to their cloud. Well, we decided that it needed to be solved, and solved in a way that didn't necessarily serve any particular master or vendor, right? Microsoft is clearly interested in solving Microsoft problems, right? As they lift and shift to their Azure cloud. What is the first class citizen in terms of the things that get moved? Well, it's Microsoft pieces of infrastructure. Our customer base, 200,000 active organizations, look way, way different than what an on-premise organization did back in the day. They use a wide variety of software to run their businesses, a wide variety of operating systems ranging from Windows to macOS to Linux to handhelds like iOS and Android. Many of them are Google Workspace enterprise customers. We do have a huge thousands, tens of thousands of companies on M365 as well. Interesting stat, Chris, I'm not sure if you know this. 77% of our paying customer base use both Google Workspace and M365 at the same time. Go figure. Why is that? You know, so there are business use cases like running pieces of Office software on macOS. Think of the heterogeneity that you know, sort of involves all that. And Jump Cloud was designed to not care what resource, what operating system, what cloud. And that was the problem that we set out to solve in when we launched in 2014. And nothing's deviated from that.
Yeah, Hope that makes sense. Yeah, it's fascinating. I probably should have known more about that story, I guess. But that's really interesting. And I'm digressing a little, because one of the things, a couple of things you mentioned there is, we're sort of 200,000 active orgs on the platform now. Started when you were 9 years ago, deciding effectively that you want to try and create a competitive product to the largest software company in the world. Those nine people, how do you get from the idea in your head and nine people to launching a product? And how do you get that first sale? I mean, you must have had to sit down with some client and say, let's take this Microsoft out and put in this new untrusted, the product, your number one. I guess it reminds me of like the old IBM thing, where people would say no one gets fired for buying IBM, right? So, yeah. But I guess it's similar with Microsoft. No one probably gets fired for deploying Active Directory, but you needed to go from, to explain to someone to say there is a better way and give them the confidence to go and do it. So how did that come about?
So respectfully, in exactly the opposite way than you just defined. The strategy from day one, like literally hitting the button that opened the website for business for Jump Cloud, we did two principal things. One, we predicated the business on having not a huge sales force and letting the product speak for itself, something we now know as product-led growth. The second point, I'll go into each of these in more detail, but the second point is that we were not going to, our little tiny, teeny company in a tiny little office in Boulder, Colorado, which no one has ever heard of, what we weren't going to do is make calls into organizations that use Microsoft Active Directory and attempt to convince them to remove the most critical piece of, again, access control software that they have running their business, and attempt to convince them that they need to use this product that they've never heard of and, you know, cause disruption, you know, in that sense, all right? So what we did was we focused on digitally native, cloud forward thinking companies. And that is where our marketing, highly programmatic and advanced marketing, which included writing thousands of articles that are SEO tuned, to basically look at companies that don't look a lot like Microsoft companies. So think, over the last 15, 20 years, you have tens of thousands of startups that are now scaling, many of whom are, you know, thousands of employees, unicorn companies generating hundreds of millions of dollars. And they did not start their IT practices based on the foundation of anything Microsoft. That is who we wanted to occupy before anyone woke up. The last four companies that I've helped build, again, look nothing like what a traditional Microsoft-based company looks like. For example, I buy MacBooks, our employees, that's what sales reps and marketing reps and our designers and everybody, that's even our engineers want to be operating off of a macOS endpoint. In fact, a lot of my engineers over the last 10, 15 years, they want to use Linux as their desktop, their laptop. Anything that I could put my credit card in the founding days of the business, to run the business, I would do that. For example, drop a credit card in, get Google Workspace. That's my email system. I'm not buying Microsoft Office copies. We're using, you know, G Suite to collaborate with. And when we would get more sophisticated, I'd bring in, you know, our accountants, et cetera, that need, you know, proper Excel. Then we, you know, we'd advance into buying Microsoft licenses. I was an early adopter of Amazon Web Services. I've only worked on SaaS technologies for the last roughly 20 years, right? So Amazon was there for me. And that's what, you know, largely I would build my companies on, right? I didn't say the word Microsoft once. Now, that doesn't mean we're not building for Microsoft solutions, honoring M365 and Azure AD accounts, honoring macOS alongside Windows, alongside Linux, right? Honoring AWS as deeply as we do Google Cloud, as we do Azure, and all the servers and infrastructure that we provide access control into. So it's just a different look. And we decided that product-led growth and providing a product for free. So many of your customers wonder, how the hell did they get to 200,000 organizations? It's by giving industrial grade, enterprise worthy security services, i.e. directory services. And, you know, of course, many of our customers know us for our deep MDM work. Giving that away for free for any company that is tiny, if you are below 10 employees, you get us for free. And we want that with sort of our give back program to make sure any company, tiny companies, startups are beginning their journey with the strongest security foot forward, which is access control, before it gets too late. So, I mean, that's the background. We did not try and convince Microsoft, you know, MCSEs who had their whole careers wrapped around, you know, Active Directory and establishing domains and building out Windows empires. We're going to go after that. Funny enough, deep into the business now, a vast majority of our revenue is being contributed by folks abandoning Active Directory on-premise. They still have Azure and or Azure AD, I should say, and they use us as the foundational part of that. So they can scale. They don't have to worry about resources they want to bring on in the future. JumpCloud is there. It's the one thing that doesn't care what resource they need to use now or in the future.
Yeah, great. That's I kind of not thought of it that way, but that's that makes perfect sense the way you describe it. So thanks for that. One of the questions I always ask everyone that I speak to, and you've touched upon it briefly there, is what were you doing prior to JumpCloud? So you've been involved in this kind of startup creating these businesses before. So were they in the same kind of on Azure? So were they on the same kind, AWS. So are they on the same kind of thing, or was it a different industry altogether?
The industries varied. The theme was I've always worked on bigger infrastructure, business to business software. Some forays into business to consumer. I built mobile video apps prior to Instagram, you know, these kinds of things, but largely all of it was cloud-based. In fact, not largely, 100% of it was cloud-based, Amazon as the cloud that we would choose. I just have this knack for, problems are like, you know, itches that I've got to scratch. And I love working with other highly inspired, you know, entrepreneurs. And it's fun. You go and build, you execute on these ideas. You convince a bunch of people that this is the right thing to do, and you will change the way people think. And you get into these things, Chris, to not play me too. Like everything that I've tried to do is a little bit categorical changing, if that makes sense, as opposed to I can't stand me too solutions. JumpCloud is a good example of trying to reinvent a category, you know, directory services, as opposed to one aspect of it. Like, here's our version of an SSO product, right? That's just an aspect. Or here's our version of a device management tool. Or here's our version of a multi-factor tool. There's billions of clone vendors that do that stuff every day. But how do you take concepts like that and, you know, aggregate them into a cohesive strategy, a platform? And if, you know, looking back at the different things that I've helped to build with great founding teams, largely, you know, has a lot to do with that, that kind of philosophy.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, obviously I'm guessing the listeners will picking up on this as well, how you're so super enthusiastic and energetic. And, you know, I can't believe you, the mid-50s thing. So obviously it must be clean living as well. But I mean, do you get any, you know, downtime to listen to books and podcasts, or where do you kind of get inspiration from those?
I do 100%. First and foremost, like I call a little bit of BS on some of the, you know, the books that people write, and I kind of roll my eyes. I can't stand rhetoric. I'm not a big rah-rah cheerleader type in that regard. I'm more of a tough love person, you know, but if the books that I'm reading are a little bit, you know, orthogonal, like, you know, yes, you can go and tackle the Jack Welch stuff and Crossing the Chasm and these sort of, you know, iconic books, and there's nuggets in there, but books like, I would say, I think over the last 2 years, the one book that I think kind of blew me away and was like, oh God, like, I know what this means, you know, and this person is speaking my language and I see the ninja tricks that are being taught in it. I would say Tony Fadell. This is the iconic designer and product leader at Apple for many years. He wrote a book called Build, and really challenging the thinking on what to build, the what and the why behind things, but not in, you know, in sort of a rhetorical eye rolly kind of way. It's really, he's got models and patterns of thinking and all that kind of stuff. So I would recommend that one. The other one, which was just gifted to me, a recent birthday, is Rick Rubin's book. And I can't say that I 100% vouch for it, but the first, you know, the first few chapters have been page turners. It's good. The book is The Creative Act, A Way of Being. And you're thinking, oh, Rick Rubin, you know, producer to, you know, some of the most iconic artists, you know, music artists in the world. This is, wow, this person has cracked the code on, there's a reason, this isn't luck. There's a reason how this person develops their strategic thinking on how to approach artists, which is like approaching a problem, right? So you want to, you know, you want to think about the structure of how you approach these problems, normalize the thinking, don't constrain yourself, but approach the problem in a very methodic way. So check this space. Hopefully, you know, I've got a lot of airplane travel here, Chris. Hopefully in the next couple of weeks, I have a good news to report on Rick Rubin's book.
Yeah, that does sound interesting. Excuse me. I mean, Ben, you mentioned how you consume that. So is that an audio book or do you get the physical book?
No, these are, I'm all physical books. I like my wife, total Kindle person. I don't own a Kindle. I just like the texture of pages.
Right. Well, I think we're almost coming to the end. We're around 30 minutes. The final question, which I ask everyone, and I'd be genuinely interested in your opinion on this, is, most of the audience today are going to be MSPs. You know the MSP space pretty well. And I guess the question would be, what sort of tip would you offer to MSPs to help them improve their business going forward?
That's a good one. I over the last, you know, N number of years, like roughly half the time that JumpCloud has been in existence, even without initially marketing to MSPs, MSPs flooded in. They saw the value of it. The tip that I would have, and then we can break this down a little bit, is thinking forward, how do you convert the business from the prototypical break-fix phenomena to acting, smelling, tasting, feeling a lot more like a SaaS-based business, subscription, thinking about how to normalize the revenue and the profit margins that, you know, you provide your services with to, you know, your various clients. You know, at the expense of like focusing on JumpCloud, it has become a foundational aspect of many of our MSPs businesses to have sort of this fortified platform that again is forming the basis of many of our MSPs' businesses. What does that mean? It means in, you know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, you know, you'd have a type of relationship with your client where, oh, okay, we've got a lay Ethernet, set up printers, and be on call on a ticket by ticket basis, you know, to help out our clients when, you know, something goes awry. The repositioning or the rethinking of this is, how do you extract revenue out of these clients on a consistent basis? One that is economic for your client, but is highly profitable for you. For example, how do you create, think of it as SKUs, like looking at your client and saying, I have this array of vendors. I use some JumpCloud. I've got CrowdStrike. You know, pick and choose your other vendors, and you sort of assemble them. Now I have an offering for you that is desktop security package. I can control access to your laptops. I can harden them through policies, no matter what the operating system is. I've got my partner in CrowdStrike, which can, you know, do EDR and constant diligence on the endpoint. And I'm going to charge you, I'm making this up, you know, $28.95 per month, you know, per desktop or per user or whatever the strategy is. That's a way different look and feel than the type of businesses we had been seeing coming in initially. And the ones who were most progressive cracked that code early on. They've already transformed their businesses. Literally, they're following the theme of digital transformation. People are, you know, the cloud is here. How can they do more of their work more cost effectively from their own remote locations while, you know, providing service to their clients without setting foot in those places on a normal basis, right? That's the way of the future. And that's what we're seeing as our most progressive MSP customers take advantage of.
Yeah, and you touched upon something there, which is I've been kind of saying for quite a while in the industry, is the MSPs to stay relevant is a challenge, because you mentioned starting JumpCloud, for example, and lots of modern companies now, they will use credit card, go and deploy an application or a service, whereas in the past, they would have been reliant on an IT company or internal resources to do that. And I think that... And more companies, new companies now, are just doing exactly what JumpCloud did, are going in there and setting up their own IT. And I guess it's how MSPs stay relevant in that conversation now. And I think that that's exactly what you described. Yeah.
Precisely.
So I think MSPs, I think, obviously, it's continually changed from, you know, the on-premise to the cloud and whatever. But I think that and more businesses have kind of come, it's a cultural thing, I guess, as well, that people are used to now at home with consumer. You can go and get an app to do anything. People expect to do that at work, just download the app and just get going with it. You don't go to an IT department and say, I want to solve this problem. You just do it. Yeah. I think that MSPs need to be kind of a bit more flexible around that.
I think so. I think MSPs don't have to fear about ChatGPT coming and taking away the robots, you know, aren't going to steal away the MSP business anytime soon. Funny, not funny. Yes, there will continually be a common set of problems. The most progressive MSPs have to keep looking forward. You know, what problems would an architecture firm, you know, have in the next 5 years? You think in 5-year chunks, right? The industry has much shorter disruption cycles now than what many traditional like IT folks have experienced over the last 30 years, right? Microsoft has just been a rock, been stable. People have developed their careers and their businesses on, you know, you've got your pricing set, you've got your skills set. I've got my MCSC and I'm covered. I know how to, you know, turn the screws on Microsoft infrastructure. A lot of that, this is not a disparagement to Microsoft infrastructure. It's wonderful. It's just, there's so much changing at a pace that these firms, again, like an architecture firm is going to scratch their head and saying, man, wouldn't it be nice to have that piece of software that is wonderful, but it's not Microsoft. It doesn't work on Windows. And, you know, it's kind of maybe browser-based, maybe not, you know, whatever the case may be, right? You have to think abstractly about how to, you know, be in front of these these now much shorter disruption cycles.
Yeah, sorry. An example of that, I was just thinking, you mentioned the sort of Microsoft engineers. I remember the situation going through with Meraki when they were formed, and sort of we'll do networking a different way, and then in a completely different way to the legacy Cisco side of things. And then I guess in the end, Cisco, so if you can't beat them, join them, and had to acquire the company. But even then, there were kind of two completely set different product sets. One was sort of cloud forward and sort of, kind of more modern approach. And then they also had the legacy sort of set, which sort of gradually died off behind it.
100%. Yeah. I mean, all of those are dead, like largely dead industries. I mean, who uses DNS anymore? Or sets it up on premise? Like, no, like, if you know, most people have shifted that to the cloud, to some service. You're building a company today, you're probably buying a GoDaddy domain, you know, all these kinds of things, right? So those are basically archetype examples of what has been blown up, industries that have been blown up, right? And this won't stop. The evolution and the thinking of how to transgress progress into more cloud-born solutions is obviously critical. I think the one immutable fact is this: the human in their device is going to be the most incredibly important intersection or interaction. So the new office is not your home office or this home office. It literally is the human and what they are computing on, right? Their device. That is the gateway to access resources. So the more we can converge on that thinking is an interesting place to be. And if I'm an MSP, that's a great place for me to be, right? I have carnal knowledge of those things. I know how to acquire them. I know how to manage them. And get more sophisticated on the security and the confidence that that new office, you know, the human and their computer is fortified and safe.
Yeah, spot on. And I think we'll finish with that, just with the final analogy that I remember someone telling me several years ago, which was, you know, having an on-premise Exchange server or on-premise DNS server is kind of equivalent to generating your own electricity back in the day before someone created a grid and then the electricity was consumed through that. And I'm sure that's going to be the same with sort of directory and access services as well going forward.
Precisely.
So brilliant. Thanks very much for that, Greg. I'll make a link to all the books and things you mentioned in the comments. If you let me know later how the Rubium one goes, I can comment on that as well within the comments. So appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us, and I'll look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you so much, Chris. Looking forward to seeing you as well.
So there you have it. Thanks once again for Greg for coming on the podcast today. Really enjoyed it. I've not actually got around to checking in how the Rick Rubin book went, but I've linked it in the description. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by JumpCloud for MSPs. JumpCloud for MSPs provides managed service providers a platform for delivering modern IT services that are identity-centric, cloud-native, and vendor-agnostic. Using JumpCloud's Open Directory platform, MSPs can iteratively replace point solutions by unifying device, identity, and access management. To learn more, please visit jumpcloud.com/MSP or email the team at partners@jumpcloud.com.